This is
one of those weeks where nothing is taking the form of that looks like there is a form. There's no form to the services. We just, you know, come up here and make a noise unto the Lord. Sometimes it's joyful. It ought to be joyful all the time, but, you know, that's the way that is. I don't have my opener with me today. They're in Virginia at the moment, so I gave him what for. No, I didn't do that. But as we were singing, delight yourself in the Lord. How many of us wake up in the morning with that attitude? Show of hands, JC. You know, we would do well to get shed of what we usually delight in. What we usually delight in is ourselves. And just about everything associated with the Lord, all the knowledge of Him, all the understanding, His knowing His ways, and seeing His power show up, are products of how much we in our lives delight ourselves in the Lord. I don't know if that babble is being clear. It's not clear in my head. I don't know that I made a point clearly. Let's look at James here a little bit. James chapter 4. Delighting yourself in the Lord is a choice. It doesn't come natural. And if, because it doesn't come natural, you don't, unless you have people around you who know the Lord and are faithful to His word and have a testimony of His power and His provision and His grace and His mercy. If you don't have somebody like that over you, then you'll never learn how it looks to delight yourself in the Lord. Paul said, as I am an example, as that you've seen and do the things you've seen in me, deliver these words to faithful men who will be faithful to the words and deliver them again faithfully. It's unnatural. You're choosing against everything that is nature in you. And the truth of the matter is, it comes against, it really gets pride aggravated in you. We want to run around today talking about my rights. I have a right to this. I have a right to that. When you delight yourself in the Lord, when you submit yourself to the Lord, when you turn your life over to the Lord, you turn over all of your rights, everything you are, to someone who is far more faithful than any government employee or any lawyer. Sorry, Steve. And, you know, when you surround yourself with faithful people who are about the business of working out their own salvation in fear and trembling, you are in an environment where you're using one another for patterns of how this is supposed to look. And to the extent that your heart isn't to delight yourself in the Lord, all you got to do is go back to Psalm 51 and pray that whole psalm with David and watch the Lord move. Watch Him move. He will. This idea of submit in verse 7 yourselves, therefore, to God. That is a choice that denies you your rights and trust in the provision of the Lord to do everything that He called you to do. To provisions total. Your trust is, we're talking about tribulation. Tribulation is a process, right? That delivers to you how faithful the Lord is. How seamless is His faithfulness to us in all ways. How great His mercy is. How loving a Father He is to us. You know, we don't go through these things because He's a mean, dirty old man up in heaven, and He takes pleasure in our suffering. He takes pleasure in our seeking His face. He takes pleasure when we get it. He takes pleasure when we can give it. Because we believe Him and we trust Him. And the only way you can learn to trust somebody is to go through stuff with them. Right? The more you go through with somebody, the more you think of yourselves as friends. We've been together through thick and thin. You got to be that way because you went through these things through thick and thin. You've proved to each other your commitment to one another. Right? So that's how it worked with the Lord. That's why He says, in John, from now on, I call you not servants, but friends. They've been through His ministry. They've seen what He does. They've done it themselves. Everything that He has given them to do, just like they did, just like everything the Father gave Him to do, He did. Submitting is counter to every natural impulse in us. But it also gets you to the second half of that verse, which is resist the devil and he'll flee from you. It puts you in a place where you can stand and say, no weapon formed against me can stand because my life is the Lord's. And my trust in Him has been formed over the years. And my understanding of His deliverance and His abundant grace and abundant mercy has changed who I am. And in all ways, that submission, in all the ways it takes forms of, whether it's submitting to an authority over you and trusting them, or trusting, submitting, and turning over your life the first time for the Lord. It's something that doesn't come natural. But it is, when you turn it over, expect Him to move. Expect Him to transform you into somebody who wants to seek His face. I have all these reference verses out of the Beatitudes. Seek Him first in His righteousness and let all these things be added unto you. If you're totally about the Lord, seeking the Lord and His righteousness, then your provision is guaranteed. As long as you're faithful to that, when you're faithful to doing His thing, then He's not going to be a provider to some, another one of the songs, Jehovah Jireh, my provider. He's no obligation to provide for you if you're going to be doing your own thing. That's up to you. And good luck with that. But if your commitment is to do His thing, Look out. Because he's good. He's good to those people who seek him and his righteousness and trust him to deliver. Draw nigh unto God, and he will draw nigh unto you. Again, that's not where we are. We wake up in the morning. I don't know about you people, but I'm not feeling near to the Lord at all. And that puts me in a place of great anxiety and fear. I don't want to be there. I want to be near to the Lord. Because he, in response, will draw nigh unto you. And we need that response. We need that response. Let's do 8. Draw nigh unto God, and he will draw nigh unto you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify ye hearts, ye double-minded. And, you know, really this can be looked at as your hands are the things with which you do things. If you've been doing things that are for you, then you need to cleanse those works. You need to be doing the Lord's thing with them. And purifying your hearts is about picking a side. You don't get to straddle the wall. The only thing is you're guaranteed to have is, I probably shouldn't go there. The longer you're up there, the more painful it's going to be. It's not a place of safety. In Revelation, it says, I would that you were hot or cold, but because you're lukewarm, I spew you out of my mouth. Remember, if he's talking to Laodicea there, I think that's who it was. But purifying your hearts, our motives matter. I just take you back again to Matthew 7, 21 through 24. It's not so much what you do or don't do, it's why or why not. That's what's all important. Somebody messes up and does the wrong thing but has the right motives, better placed than somebody who has the wrong motives and does what was perfect. You know, and you're going to screw up. That's just something you're going to have to live with. But, you know, you don't have to stay there. You have an opportunity to learn the Lord and his ways. And then be able to turn around and give them to somebody else. That's too sweet. But purifying your hearts is about remembering to delight yourself in the Lord. And however many times a day you have to remind yourself to resubmit yourself to the Lord. Everybody can be a subject. That's not a big deal. A subject is out of compulsion having to do what he does. Being submitted to somebody, you're doing it by choice. And the motives of our hearts are not always pure. Go figure. But as I'm wandering through, let's do a quick hit on Philippians 2:12. Wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God which worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Not only are our motives not right, our wills aren't right. And if it wasn't for his love and his patience, we wouldn't ever be able to do anything. We keep blindly trying to hit a mark that we can't even see.
But he loves us enough to work in us to will and to do of his good pleasure. That's why we were created. That's why we have been recreated in him. And this idea of submission to his will, so that he can will and to do of his good pleasure in us, is not something to be feared or something to be resisted because we don't have any knowledge of it. You can have knowledge of it. It's all over the place, man. Avail yourself of it. Why I'm here. That's why the other ministers that are here, usually, are here. It's why the other ministers in the other parts of the country are there. Avail yourself of them. Ephesians 3. When you submit to his lordship, when you seek his kingdom and his righteousness, and his provision comes to you because you're seeking the right thing, then you could start getting glimpses into Ephesians 3:20. Now unto him that is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us, unto him be the glory in the church by Christ Jesus throughout all ages, world without end. You haven't even got a clue. You can't possibly have a clue. But you can get some glimpses into how exceedingly abundantly above or beyond all that we could ask or think. We can't even conceive of a thought of how good he is. How exceedingly abundantly above anything we could ask or think. The longer I do this, the more exceedingly abundantly I understand he is able to do above that which I'm able to even conceive of. He can do that in you. He can do that in me. Why wouldn't you want him to? Why would you resist that? Why? That's like being a 5-year-old and your daddy comes home and he's got some other kind of goodie. He brings home a goodie every day. And they just keep getting better and better. Train the kid to be real happy when daddy comes home. Purifying your hearts and not being double-minded is the safety. It's the safety that keeps you from being the workers of iniquity who he did not know in Matthew 7:24. Whose motives for doing what they did were selfish. They were prideful. Jesus didn't take them to task over what they did. It's the first place my mind went. You're lying. But Jesus didn't take him to task for that. Jesus said, Depart from me, I never knew you, you workers of iniquity. That means what they were doing to be stroked by men. They wanted their pride stroked. It was about pride. Your motives were wrong. And that phrase, I never knew you. That's, the polar opposite of Paul saying to the Philippians that I may know him and the fellowship of his sufferings and the power of his resurrection. There is no excuse. Because the only way he's going to know you is when you are a partaker of the fellowship of his sufferings, the power of his resurrection, when you, by the choice, by the purification of your choices, by God working in me to will and to do of His good pleasure, you get hid with Christ in God. You're covered. Then He knows you. It's the only way He knows you. And you don't get there by doing the right things for the wrong reason, or the wrong things for the wrong reason. You get there by delighting yourself in the Lord, submitting yourself to His ways, to learn His ways, to be partaking in His ways. And you know, it's like, and watch the floodgates open up exceedingly abundantly above that which you could ask or think. He's good. Let Him be good. Let Him be good. Let Him be your life.